Manhattan. 7:30. Stephen Dorff will be at the Cutting Room, 8 p.m. Lotus will be at the Brooklyn Bowl, 9 p.m. The Chapin Sisters will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 3, 9:30. On your concert billboard for Tuesday, April 15th. Vince Scuderi, Out of the Box Big Band, will be at the Metropolitan Room, Manhattan, beginning at 7. Rufus Wainwright will be at the Town Hall, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, April 16th. The Story of Descendants All, This is a Film, presented by the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington Village, 7:30.
Diverse, eclectic, surprising, even accidental. These are the words that are used for describing WUSB's programming. Words that are not used? Boring. Wallpaper. Supermarket. Elevator. Institutional. Commercial. Blah. Whatever term describes us, there's one we all agree upon. Broke. We get some money from other sources, but it's never enough. We depend on what you give, and so we ask. Call 631-632-6901 or go to our website at wusb.fm/pledge. We'll only have two words for that. Thank you.
Good evening, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. The time now is 6:01. Time for Off the Wall. Thank you. good evening to everyone.
Yes. A very good evening from the person whose microphone is not on.
I think you're on now.
I'm on now.
This is off the wall.
It certainly is.
And tonight, you are...
Yeah, we didn't think beyond that, did we? Tonight, what? We didn't plan anything.
That's a good point.
Tonight, okay, this is off the wall. And tonight, okay, fill in the blank, because that's pretty much who we are, the blanks. Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, you tell the guy at the piano to shut up a little bit. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
He's very enthusiastic. Who are you?
Oh, right. I'm hosting the show tonight. And,
hello, hosting the show tonight.
My name is Kyle.
Oh, that's your name. Kyle, okay.
And tonight I'm joined by our special guest, Emmanuel.
Well, okay, fine. You could say special guest, or you could say co-host, or you could say somebody who happens to be sitting in. But we should also say that joining us tonight, and I don't think we've thrown the right switches yet. I'm going to let you... Because, Kyle, this is your birth by fire or whatever. I'll let you figure out how to find Finn. Because, wow, that's going to be... Yeah, that's... Oh, wow, he's remembering. He's remembering to use the mixer. Yeah, you got to use the mixer and you got to use the board. Finn is in a distant studio someplace. We cannot even see him.
Right.
And if we're able to find him, it'll be nothing short of a miracle. And if you believe in miracles, folks, put your hands together and pray that you'll hear the sounds of Finn.
That's right.
That's, of course, if Finn is even talking to
us.
We're
praying.
Yeah.
Finn, could you say hello to everyone?
Is he talking? Well, here's the thing. This board is either left dominant or right dominant, and I notice you have the same switch down on two channels, so if you get rid of one of them, you might get Finn there. I'll try that. Finn, are you there?
There
he is. See? So the board, if you have the same switch down on two channels... The one on the left will always dominate, and since the volume was down on that pot, we're talking technical, folks. That's why you couldn't hear him. But now you can hear him.
Am I found?
Yeah, we found you.
I'm in this little tiny cubicle, and I...
We found you on channel 7.
I'm very lonely.
Yeah, you were being muted in channel 6, but now you're on channel 7.
Very good.
Welcome.
7 is my favorite.
Well, it's good to hear that. Good to know that. And welcome to Off the Wall.
Well, thank you.
Another fundraising edition of the program, because the radio station is in fundraising mode. We ask people to call 631-632-6901, pledge whatever you can afford, and help keep this radio station on the air. We should start with something very somber for us, and that is the loss of one of our staff members very suddenly, unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday mornings, Wednesday afternoons will not be the same anytime soon with the loss of our beloved Claudia, known as CC in the morning, host of Various Grooves and the classical program Wednesday mornings. And we just found out about this yesterday when it happened. And it's just another indication of how this place is a family, how we deeply feel the effects that we all bring to this place and feel the pain of any loss that we suffer. And this one certainly was unexpected, at least for me it certainly was unexpected. Finn, I know you've listened to Claudia's programs over the years as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I've spoken to Claudia quite a few times. I was not, quote-unquote, friends with her, but we were acquaintances and, once again, as you said, family members at the station. And when I would come in and need her assistance for something or whatever the case would be on a Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday morning, she was always there and always helpful and always supportive. And I'd come in having to do some downloads or whatever the case would be, and she was always just wonderful and a real kind and gentle and spiritual heart in this world lacking all of the above.
Well, I liked it because she always spoke her mind. She always was somebody who would say whatever she felt, and without sugarcoating it. And I always liked that. I always like people who are right up front and with their opinions, with their methods of doing things. And boy, she was She was a doer, that's for sure. If you ever visit WUSB, the very first thing you see is a work of Claudia's. That's the mural outside our studio. She mm-hmm. painted that, painstakingly painted that. And it's just, I know, Kyle, you saw that. You photographed it, I believe.
Yeah, I made a pilgrimage out to Stony Brook a long, long time ago and wanted to see where the station was and just learn about the campus a little bit. And I took a big photograph of it, and, yeah, it's the first thing you see when you approach the radio station here on the campus at the Union Building here.
She was a volunteer at WUSB for 25 years, and it just goes to show you the dedication that so many of our staffers have to just literally walk in off the street and start doing work here, one sort or another, whether it be doing a show, filing records, or something completely outside what anybody would even suggest doing, painting the wall outside the radio station. That was that's the kind of magical person Claudia was. So we're all deeply affected by that. I'm sure you'll hear all kinds of tributes over the next few days and probably long after that.
Yeah, you were showing me a couple pictures and some of the words that were being said in light of this, and I was really amazed because it was yet another amazing person here at the station that I haven't met. I've never even, I might have seen her a couple times as just a volunteer and a guest here, but it was pretty amazing because it really speaks to the size of that community.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the sad news from WUSB tonight, and it's something that we'll be carrying with us for quite some time. The positive part of all this is that we are a community here at this station. We are a group of people that dedicate ourselves to doing radio over the course of many years now, and our listeners are a part of that family, and we know they share in our feelings of great sadness now. Let's just remember that over the time we have ahead of us, that we're all in this together and we're all going to keep this place afloat. So, any other words, Finn? Anything happened in your week?
In my week?
Actually, you know what? I found out something about you this week. I found out you're a very talented musician.
Oh, well, I don't know about very talented, but I am a musician on occasion, yes.
Yeah, Kyle and I happened to stumble into this bar in Queens, and we saw you playing guitar and singing your heart out to a Beatlemania-ish type of crowd, people swooning and screaming and jumping up and down.
Yeah, it was embarrassing, you know.
You would think that a DJ in WUSB would just simply stick to playing records, but no, Finn is not content with that. He has to go out and try and really make a mark in the musical world there, and I think you've done that.
Well, we had a lot of fun, and thank you guys for coming down. But it's a thing I used to do a lot, and I was kind of pushed into this. But so we did this gig. I don't know if there'll ever be any others, but we were very happy with the turnout and very happy with what we did, if I could possibly remember what we did.
Yeah, it was kind of a hazy night, but I was outside actually in the terrace, and when your band went on, I was like, you know, has Finn started yet? And it was you singing, and I had no idea that was your voice.
Yeah, that's my voice. It's pretty. It can be a frightening thing.
Well, it just goes to show you have no idea what some of the people at this radio station are up to outside of their regular slots.
Exactly correct. We all have other things we do in the world. Because this check alone that we get from this place does not cover all of our bills.
Big as it is.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, you guys should be calling right now, I think, 631-632-6901 to help keep our high salaries afloat.
Yes.
All right. Now, let's explain sarcasm to some of the people out there that might not be familiar with it.
Yes.
None of us get paid a penny at this place. We all do this out of either insanity or love or a combination of the two. And if you call up and pledge anything, it makes us able to fix things, get things working, and keep this radio station going. That's the important thing. 631-632-6901, and we have all kinds of cool things to give people who call in. Isn't that right, Finn?
That's correct. We have in addition to your standard, you know, WUSB swag for like $35, you can get CDs, any kind of CD of your choice put together by DJs, myself, or Eric or Kyle. I'm sure we can come up with something. We have the ceramic coffee mug, the baseball cap, the winter scarf, all of which are red this year, because that's Stony Brook, baby, red. This way we can see you in the crowd. We'll know you are. There'll be a sea of red out there, all with WUSB caps on. And for $50, we have gift certificates to various places, none of which, of course, I have in front of me, but, of course, you can call and make a request, and I'll hook you up. We have T-shirts, and for $75, we have sweatshirts and or the red blanket throw, so you can wrap your sweatshirt in the red blanket throw.
Yep.
And that's right. And for $90.10, you can get a membership to the 90.1 Club, which gets you tons of cool invites to WUSB events and related events, and the blanket throw and a CD. So really cool stuff. Also, you get an invitation to our live broadcast that happened here. So when a band is in here, you can come see them live in addition to, hearing them later on the archive, and some great stuff. And we have all kinds of memberships, which include special ticket giveaways, membership at the University Cafe, the Stoller Center, SeaWolves Sports Games, which I can hook you up with. A one-year WUSB membership is $250, 5 years, $500, etc. So give us a call, 631-632-6901. If you don't want any of those premiums, of course, and just want to give some cash, anything from $5 to $25 to whatever, to $1 million. Give us a call right now and express your love for Off the Wall and for WUSB Stony Brook. 631-632-6901.
Well, we had quite a week, didn't we, Kyle? We wound up, we wound up speaking at the United Nations.
Yes.
it's true. I mean, I could just say that and leave it there, and it's very true. That's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
So tell us about it.
Well, okay, I figured that was enough right there. I guess to say we spoke at the United Nations, but if you want more details,
What do you need?
Yeah, we could tell a few more details.
That's the abbreviation UN, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
that's a little-known fact that that Finn jumped on right there. Well, actually, I didn't know this. I didn't know that there were things going on at the United Nations that really aren't part of the United Nations.
It's quite a facility.
It's a big building.
Yeah,
it's a big building and a big area of land around the building.
Uh huh. Right on the water there. I guess it'd be Midtown.
Midtown, 47th Street in that area on the East River.
Yeah.
Wait, are we supposed to be telling people where it is? That's kind of a security thing, right?
Oh, man.
No, I mean, I don't know. These days, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
All right, well, forget where it might be, but let's just say that it's probably somewhere in the vicinity.
Yeah.
And we were told where it was, and we were invited to go there by these people running a, we can say the name of the conference, but it's not going to mean much to a lot of our listeners.
It's a software, basically
a Drupal conference.
Development project, yeah. For open source software. And
Drupal is a content management system.
Yeah, for everyone out there. We got our first call,
Thank you, person, for calling in, whoever that is. You've made us happy.
WUSB.
Okay, we don't want to have Finn taking the pledge over the air. But if...
That's how it works.
See, it's right there, folks, right there. That doesn't happen on NPR. You don't hear the person actually answering the phone.
You two could be greeted by that gentleman. And we'll actually run into another room, too, if you'd like to call now. 631-632-6901. We might have to all leave and take the phones because you are so eager and so enthusiastic about pledging to the station. And
we put music on or just leave dead air or the sound of us running away?
I'll look around here somewhere.
All right. Well, that's a best-case scenario.
Okay.
It is a content management system called Drupal. Which I don't know what that means exactly. It's D-R-U-P-A-L. What does that word mean? Is it a name or something?
We didn't get to figure out the the epistemology.
We made it very clear to them. We have know very little about what Drupal is,
yes,
about content management systems at all. They just wanted us to speak about hackers, about 2600, about Hope,
yes,
things like that.
Yeah, basically, we talked to a core team of like security researchers and people that produce and develop for this particular bit of software, and it's used in websites. Pretty broadly, about 2% of the internet runs this kind of management system, and it's probably got the best name of all the content management systems out there. So, be that as it may, we were really just telling stories about, I don't know, some of our adventures, security stuff, our attitudes.
Well, before we get into what we actually were telling,
oh yeah,
this was at the United Nations,
absolutely,
and it wasn't part of the United. At least as far as I know, they were not part of the United Nations.
Right.
But you can have conferences in their facilities, and that's what they were doing.
Right.
And so we had to we took a bus uptown.
Mm-hmm.
We noticed as we were on the bus that we were passing dozens and dozens and dozens of police cars.
You remember that?
Yeah, well, first of all, first there were just cops standing at the bus stops, and that was kind of weird right there.
Yeah.
One cop even came onto the bus and wrote down something from the bus MetroCard reader. And then got off the bus. I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah.
Then we started noticing that there were more and more police cars parked on the side of the road and cops everywhere.
Almost entire blocks of police cars.
Uh-huh. Do we have another call?
Yeah, we have a second call now.
Second call, two calls. We only have one Finn, though. How's that going to work?
Well, he is very busy in there. I'd like to ask more people to call. Finn is amazing.
What are you
going
to do to Finn? He only has four arms.
Well, then I'll send you out.
Oh, that's how it's going to be.
Okay,
I might be at the guest microphone, but I'm going to be just sent away. Like, okay, fine.
Okay, I'll run out.
I'll be happy to leave.
We'll do rock, paper, scissors.
I'll do rock, paper, rock. How about that?
Ow.
Yeah.
All right.
I got a real rock in my hands, folks, for those people that don't. We have a rock here in the radio station. I don't know what it's here for. It's always, I guess it's to hold open the door.
Right.
But right now I'm holding it in a threatening manner towards Kyle.
Menacing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
So there were entire blocks of police officers lined up as we got closer and closer to this building. And we were aware that we were going to have to be, going through a bunch of security. We didn't realize we'd have this kind of welcoming committee.
Now, we knew Drupal had good security.
Yeah.
But we didn't know they had that good security.
That's pretty good.
Where they had all the NYPD guarding them. But as it turns out, it had nothing to do with Drupal. What we found out, I guess we can reveal what we found out. But yes, we had to go through security to get into the complex to start with.
Yeah, and the security is basically like airport security. You've got a whole X-ray thing. You have to empty your pockets.
Yeah, well, X-rays. You don't always have to empty your pockets.
Right.
I never know what to do now, because sometimes they tell you just take the metal things out of your pockets. Now they're telling you take everything out of your pockets. I have like 19 pockets, so I have all different things. I found some things I've been looking for a long time, actually, because I hadn't gone in those pockets. So I had to put everything onto a tray and then figure it all out later. It was a good 10 minutes doing that.
Right.
And then we were actually in. We got a little pass. But we had to go through a couple of other different detectors occasionally, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, this building was under construction, it looked like, a little bit, and so we were told to go one way, so we sort of walked into the one area that had a normal, a key card entry, but we don't have key cards, so we had to go around the side of the visitor side.
Well, to get to the building, we had to walk a good half mile along the East River,
I'm talking about
the first building.
The first entrance, they had the whole kids there for the school,
Yeah.
We're not a part of a tour. He's like, no, well, you got to go around here, the key card, then we go through the building, out to the other side, there's the East River.
Walking by the East River, very
maybe
pleasant.
I think we saw one or two signs for this event. It was like, okay, well, we'll turn right and head up the side of the river there, and
that was it.
And what we did see is a helicopter landing right where the president usually lands.
Yeah.
And that was our first inkling, okay, something else is going on. That's why all of the police and stuff like that. I saw a military helicopter landing as we're walking around.
Not at the UN.
Our entrance.
Not
yeah.
at the UN.
Oh, no.
Down by 34th
right,
Street.
One of the piers, one of the helipads down there. So it sort of made sense that there was a little bit more security than we had... than just the regular UN security, but we're outside again. So we had just walked inside, then we had to go around and walk along the water to the very tall building where I guess this venue was, and it was there.
The monolith building.
Yes, and then some I don't know, custodians or something that were standing out there. We asked them, you know, how do we get in? Where's this event? And then we bumped into a woman who was going to the same event. And then we went into a side door, and she said, I had to fight, you know, all this stuff the last couple of days just to get in. And then we sort of followed her lead and were able to get into the other security entrance. And that was how we were. Then we're going into a basement, and then we went through three entrance gates.
Yeah.
It seemed. Well, after the security.
When
check.
We first tried to get into the building, and people don't see this, I guess, unless you're looking at it from Brooklyn. There's a massive satellite dish by the entrance, and I didn't know what they were actually receiving on that, but it was really huge, and that was where we. At first tried to get in. Well, we went in that side, and then we had to go all the way around and get to the right elevator and that kind of thing. Do we have Finn back? No, he's still talking to people. Is he taking pledges?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I heard voices. Hi, Finn.
Well, hi there.
Hey.
We'd like to thank Michael from Brookhaven who gave us a call and is going to get some couple of CDs for his pledge.
Okay, I hear someone else talking. Is there another pledge being taken?
There's another pledge being taken.
So we have a team of people in there now. That is amazing.
That's community.
You see
right
how
there.
This works.
Mm-hmm. And we're in a 2-foot square room.
No, we're in the United Nations.
Oh, that's right.
That's part of our story. I try to keep up, Finn.
So there's a massive satellite dish. Then we had to figure out which bank of elevators to go up.
Well, we went up the wrong one first.
We kept hitting
15,
and
it wouldn't light. And you figured out that, you're in the elevator that goes to 30 or something, so that's why it's not lighting up. So we had to go to the other elevator, and then we hit the right button.
That's right.
And that was the end of our day.
No,
we did more. That's right. No, continue, please.
That was when we actually got to the event, and actually worked out. They weren't doing anything. It's not like we were up on a stage. It was more of a conference-style thing, a small, tight group of these security guys, and they had been talking about some of the SSL vulnerabilities that were floating around last week, that were making people's heads float around last week.
The heart bleed.
Yes, yes. And that was really, really neat. They welcomed us in, and we just sort of sat down and joined the group, talking about stuff we like doing.
Yeah, we just talked about what it was like working on a hacker magazine, doing hacker conferences, doing hacker radio shows, making hacker documentaries, eating hacker food,
drinking
hacker air.
Drinking hacker soda.
Hacker soda, hacker beer, hacker, well, you know, all kinds of things that the hacker world encompasses that we're a part of. And it was more of a conversation than a lecture. Because it was a conversation, yeah, as you say.
It was. I don't know. We really didn't know what to expect. I was really nervous going in, but I think we were really well received, and it was kind of good practice for us to hear the characterization of what we do, because there's so much. Sometimes we don't even reflect on it, and it's really good to tie it together and maybe inspire people a little bit or just share our attitudes, why we do certain things, mm-hmm. what our take on it is, and tying that into the things that they're concerned about with security and then a lot of like interacting within the community as we've seen a lot of different things in the security community, like kind of ways of being, ways of handling things, openness to certain ideas, that kind of thing. And it was cool to have their listening and really be heard that in the context mm-hmm. of being accepting of other things, being open, and how far that's gotten us. We got a lot of mileage out of being wrong, being kind of not the expert. And in a lot of these communities, if you're a security person and you're done or you've covered everything,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be a very good security person, because it's an ongoing thing. We really like to communicate that learning software, learning systems, learning whatever, people in general, that's a lifelong thing. You can't stop. You can't be closed to it in any way. And I think they got that, and it was really
It's cool because it makes you take a look at yourself and see the things that you're involved in, the things that mean something to you. And we're all about freedom of speech. We're all about sharing information and exploring and playing around and sometimes breaking things just to see what they're made out of. It's part of the hacker mentality, and it's kind of good to reach into yourself and explain that. And also encourage people to pursue that part of themselves as well, because Yeah, it's very easy to get stuck in a mode where you're just a security professional and this is what you're doing. It's better if you're open to other perspectives, and it's a continuous growing experience for you as well. So I think we each got something out of that with that conversation.
Yeah.
So after all that was over, we were free to leave, and we wandered around the building a little bit because, hey, we're in the UN, for God's sake. We're on the other side of the fence. That was kind of cool that this happened. But apparently we had come there not only on the same day, but at the same moment that Obama was in town, and that's what all the cops were about downtown, and that's what the helicopter was about. He might have been in that helicopter for all we know. And just as we walked outside the building and we're walking back towards First Avenue, we hear all this shrieking and jumping up and down, because at that very moment, that's when Obama decides to pass by in his motorcade.
Yep.
And it's all this excitement, and we just couldn't have timed it better. I mean, going to the UN was cool enough, but going to the UN right at the moment when Obama passes it, he wasn't even going to the UN. He was going to some party someplace. I don't know what he was doing, but he passed by at that moment. And
I think it was a rave.
Maybe.
But it was actually interesting. We were not allowed to leave the building.
That's what they told us. We left when we felt like leaving. So apparently if we had left before we felt like leaving, then we wouldn't have been allowed to leave.
Exactly. Or we would have been very quickly moved very far away because they wanted that street open. And I believe they wanted us to stay until the top of the hour or something like that. And we were sitting there soaking it up for a good...
It doesn't make much sense because we left and that's when Obama passed by. Wouldn't they want us to stay inside until after he passed by? Isn't that the whole point of keeping us inside?
Yeah, it was... a bit bizarre.
We just kind of walk past everything. You know, all these people, they have to pass cards to go through their turnstiles.
Right.
And we didn't have cards. We had little cardboard things that said they didn't have our names on it. So we showed that to whatever security guard was manning the position, and he just said, okay, go through this door then, which the door had absolutely no logging of any sort. So we actually had more power than people with the cards because we weren't being logged. We can go through the door, whereas their movements were being monitored when they went through the turnstile. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And that happened a few times, too, because we didn't have those kinds of cards.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to remind everyone, this is the Spring Radiothon here at WUSB. You could call right now, 631-632-6901. Pledge your support for the station. Any amount is fine, $5, $10, $15, whatever you can commit. We have various pledge levels and gifts to give you, but really what matters is getting a large volume of people on board for this hour to give us a couple more commitments, a couple more pledges. It shows that our show has a pretty dedicated audience, and that the station can kind of turn to us and say, hey, we need you guys to help out a little bit and keep some of this goal we're doing taken care of. And so that's what we're doing. That's why we're here. We've got a lot of support from our good friend Finn and other people at the station. And we're ready. We're ready for your call. 631-632-6901. If you're on campus, it's 26901. Students are allowed to pledge. This is your station too. And in fact, if you're a student, you could walk in here and I don't know, help out with a show. You could help us take calls. You could maybe take some classes. Or
even if you're not a student.
Yeah.
Claudia was not a student. She was a community member and a perfect example of how somebody can literally walk in and become such a huge part of this place and do the amazing things that she did in her time here. And USB would not be USB without both the people from the campus and the people from the community. That's what's unique about this place. We're not just a college station. There are many of those. Usually they broadcast to an audience of like 10 people through a very low power. But we're a station that broadcasts to Suffolk County and parts of Nassau, parts of Connecticut, and, of course, the whole world through the Internet. And we're open to all kinds of people joining us and helping us and lending their expertise, whether it's technical or musical or through talk shows. We encourage people. We always have encouraged people to be alternative as far as their approach. Even our sports broadcasts are done differently than commercial broadcasts. We always try to do something that is different, and we encourage anybody who thinks differently to join us and get involved. Go to WUSB.fm. You'll find all kinds of information there on the website, including ways to pledge there, too, but ways to get involved.
Yeah, and just another reminder, 631-632-6901. We're ready. We promise it will not be a very long process. It's really simple. We'll get your pledge level, a little bit of your personal info. We can sort all of that out and let you get on with your day. But really what matters the most is just a little bit of your time and some funds to help us contribute to the community goal here at WUSB.
Well, let me just ask, is Finn still on the phone? Or is,
no, I think Finn
good.
Is good.
We'd like to thank, in addition to Mike from Brookhaven, I'd like to thank Jack from West Islip, and we need you to call. Let's just say we hooked up a wonderful premium with Mike in Brookhaven, a couple of great CDs that we'll be putting together for him, and Jack called as well, and you should join both Jack and Mike.
Yeah, maybe you're Mike in Brooklyn, or maybe you're Jack from West Virginia, you know?
Could
see what
be,
I did
right.
there? West Islip, West Virginia, Brookhaven, Brooklyn, yeah.
631-632-6901. Give us a call right now.
Now, Finn, when someone does call, what are they in for? You're not going to interrogate them and make them nervous, right? Basically, you pick up the phone, right, and then the person says, hello, I'd like to pledge support for WUSB. What's the next thing that happens then?
Well, the next thing that happens is they give us their name and address, all of which stays confidential.
Okay,
and,
all right.
Then their credit card and or billing address, usually credit card is best, makes everything expedite at a greater rate. And then we make some offers of some premiums. And, of course, some people like Jack didn't specifically want a premium. He just gave a very generous donation to WUSB. And but we can be very, very creative with the premiums. As I said, Mike wanted a couple of CDs, a couple of ska CDs. And I said I could absolutely hook him up with that, some custom ska CDs. So we'll be sending those out. So, yeah, we're very, very flexible, and it's not a cold experience.
No, Finn is the deal maker here at the radio station. So
Don't say that.
I'm just saying, if you want to get something really really good. And,
yeah, we won't tell anybody else. It'll just be between you and I.
Yes, yes. 631-632-6901. Please join us. Join the people that have called up. Join Mike and Jack. I got the names right, right?
Yep.
Okay, and I know there are many more people listening right now.
Yeah, and if you'd prefer to do it online, the address is wusb.fm/pledge. That's spelled P-L-E-D-G-E.
All right. Couldn't be simpler. You know, Finn, did you hear about our exciting day at the United Nations that we were talking about?
I heard
about?
Some of it when I was in between phone calls, yeah.
Well, you know what? We went to the United Nations. We saw Obama pass by, but that wasn't all that that we had going for us. First of all.
You're right.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something. Those of you who have been following what we've done over the years with hacker conferences will know that the second hacker conference, Beyond Hope, 1997, was not held at the Hotel Pennsylvania. This is a bit of trivia. You might want to write this down for future competitions because it is asked on some of those talk shows. 1997 was the only Hackers on Planet Earth conference to be held outside the Hotel Pennsylvania. It was held at a building called the Puck Building on Lafayette Street and Houston Street. You're familiar with that, aren't you? Are you not, Finn?
Absolutely, yes.
How did I know you'd know about this? Of course.
Well, there
you
used
did.
To be some great. It was a great venue to see music for a long time.
Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And all kinds of things went on in that building. There was a magazine called Puck Magazine that was printed. Did you really know that magazine?
I did.
Because I didn't. I didn't know about this. I was very heartbroken to find out that the building was turned into a retail store. Kyle dragged me down there after we left the United Nations. And the reason that I was particularly incensed by it all, it's a kind of sporting goods store and is based in Seattle. And so
I thought
Kyle was just going to rub my nose in it, hey, the Seattle firm comes in and takes over the building that one of the hacker conferences took place in many years ago. But, you know, when we went in this place, and it's not an endorsement for any company, because I'm not going to talk about their products at all, what I noticed walking through there was that they had preserved so many aspects of the building. There was some kind of lithograph. What was that thing that we saw?
Yeah, they had found these tablets in the basement somewhere that had some lithographic prints on them. So the printing had been done directly onto the stone tablets, and then they mounted them on the walls, not in front of plexiglass. No, right there. You could look at it. You could touch it. And I don't know the exact reason why lithographs were done on stone, but it may have been like a testing process or even guys fooling around in the old printing lithographic shop that was there.
They had throughout that retail space, and they basically took two levels below street level, which we didn't even know existed when we had our conference. They restored all that. They took relics from those areas, and they either restored them or displayed them in various parts of their store. And they explained what they were, what they were all about, the historical significance of it all. There's a massive, what was that wheel thing that we found?
You're right. Yeah, those were for a steam. Those are flywheels for steam powered press or mill.
They were basically huge.
They're enormous wheels. Probably had huge leather or canvas belts on them that ran other things, and really interesting counterweighted valve that kept the it was a governor that kept the mill running at a certain speed with these counterweights and using centrifugal force, which was a genius and sort of novel system at the time. Yeah. But it basically regulated these steam powered flywheels to keep everything consistent for the purpose of producing goods and stuff.
So these guys at REI, instead of just dismantling it or destroying it, they displayed it. They displayed it in the middle of their store. There it was, and with an explanation as to what it was all about. And there were just so many different things that they did to appreciate the building. They took bits of the wood, and they displayed it over the cash register or the lights or something.
The wood and the heating vents. You know, you have like a metal grate on a central heating. Well, they had very ornamental grates that I think were used for some sort of airflow. Amazing to believe that they had central air back in the day. But in any event, they used them as shrouds over the lights, over the cash registers. They also used nails that had been forged in this very building to use for displays for all the shoes. It just really spoke to the attitude of environmental stewardship, even in a huge metropolis, if I dare say. They were able to find and appreciate the environment around them. And I was really surprised. We had walked by a couple times, and I think I had some coupons and that kind of thing to spend there eventually. Well, it's a little different than that. But we went in there and just getting bits and bobs, because we plan to travel, and there's a lot of, you know, little travel items you can get for your toiletries and things like that. It's always good to check things out, make sure you've got all the gear for your holding your passports and all that. And so I thought, yeah, we'll pick up some things when we're walking by. We'd never actually gone in, and as I said, I had a little bit of kind of a gift card thing. So that experience was unlike anything I'd imagine. I thought maybe they'd just gut it and kind of make it all like every other, quote, store like
that's
theirs.
That's what I'm used to. That's
right,
what I
right, right. I didn't really, but the other stores they do have are very often, bring in a lot of the natural elements for the area. Even if it is in like a strip mall setting, they'll try to bring in things if the building itself.
You can only work with what you have.
Right.
The Puck Building was a masterpiece, and the fact that they recognized that and preserved it, that meant the world to me. So I actually think that it's in better shape in their hands than it was in the hands of the people running the building before, because they sure weren't preserving it and appreciating it.
Yeah, and there is a lot of other stuff in that. If you look around the side of the building, there's a original entryway and elevator and things. There's really so much stuff that they did do that it was sort of less of a story than any of the items in the store. And you and I found ourselves walking around reading displays and historical stuff.
Of course, we're the only people doing this.
Right.
But we're used to that. But our day was not over yet.
Then we
walked back up into the East Village, and we just happened to walk down a street. And what do you know? The mayor is there. The mayor's just hanging out with a bunch of people. There are a few cops around, not a lot, but it's just a buzz in the street. Yeah, the mayor's over there. And I didn't really believe it, but then you actually pointed him out, because he's like 8 feet tall and not hard to spot.
Exactly. I heard someone say his kid was around or something, like his son was out and was out in the town, and that was the reason for all the security. But then we walked down another street, and I looked over there, and I saw all of these guys on the other side of the street, and here's this enormous guy in a suit just smiling, you know, out on a Friday night, totally in the city, pressing flesh, but not in a, like, in a false, like a inauthentic way, like very, very much enjoying the position, but the people and the community. And I just love that because, you know, the president's in town as a leader, and here's this leader, basically, doing what he feels is necessary, to build that community. These are the people that voted for him. He could just sit in the glass tower. He could go to these fundraisers, and maybe he did, you know, hang out with the president. I don't know. But the point is, it was really cool to see him on the street with everybody else, getting ready for the weekend and having a pretty good time.
Yeah, that, totally. And, like I said, not very much, in the way of security. It just, a few cops, nothing else. And, that was kind of cool. So, one day walking around United Nations, president, mayor, and a cool building. Yeah.
Yeah, and we noted that it was all three sort of, it was funneling from wider, positions of power down to the local. We were ready to meet like a building manager, like a neighborhood, or community organizer of some sort. It was sort of interesting. You had the UN with a sort of global seat of power, and then, the federal level with the president going by, and then here's the, city mayor, walking down the street out, you know, getting some coffee after a dinner or something, And then we just looked at each other and said, well, what's next? I don't know if we can do much more.
Well, we thought maybe we'd try to find the governor, but we sort of lost interest in that.
Well, you guys did whittle your way down to seeing me on Saturday night.
Yeah, we were moving our way up to that, and that
different
was...
Different Jason.
Yeah, we were prepared.
Eventually, you know.
So anyway, here we are. It's 49 minutes past the hour. We should probably start the show now.
Yeah, we'll... I know you've got some stuff. Why don't you go
That's
ahead
what we've been up to. Let's see what the rest of the world has been up to. Well, we still don't know where the plane is, but you know what? They finally figured out. I don't believe these people because this is the thing I suggested right away. You check the cell towers to see if any phone of any passenger or crew member was pinging, trying to get a signal. And lo and behold, yesterday they said, oh, yeah, you know what, the co-pilot's phone, or was it the pilot, I don't know, one of their phones was tried to connect to a tower in Western Malaysia, and wasn't able to. I'm not exactly sure how, I guess it weren't able to maintain a connection or something, because obviously it pinged, it got a connection of some sort.
Ping is a really dangerous word to use in this, I think.
I suppose it is.
Attempting to communicate with the tower, mm-hmm. Sending a signal to initiate a connection.
Okay, so they finally got this information, more than a month afterwards. So you asked a very good question yesterday, Carl. You asked a question, is this something that this guy turned on his phone, was trying to get a message out,
right?
Or was it just leaving his phone on? And that makes all the difference, because if the phone was turned on at that point, then you know that something was up and that he was trying to get a message out. If the phone was left on, it could mean anything.
Right.
So this is all they have to do. And I kind of how to get through to them, all they have to do is log to see if that phone pinged other towers when the plane was taking off, when it was still within range of all the other towers. If they got... logs of that, then obviously the phone was left on. If they did not, then the phone was turned on. And that is a significant piece of information. So maybe in a couple of months, someone will think to do that, and we'll get that information.
I don't know. It's a really a mystery, as has been said, and they seem to be, I don't know, starting, getting really haphazard information. Mm-hmm. It's like they'll go a long way down one route, just like the original search area was so messed up. It just seems like it's just such a fragmented search effort. It's not cohesive. It's getting a little better, but it's really...
Then they'll totally change the story. They'll say, well, yeah, it was the pilot who said it's not the co-pilot, and they didn't say this, they said that, and the plane wasn't 45,000 feet, it was actually 200 feet. You know, it's basically... It's like they're throwing a dice every day and making things up, really.
Basically reiterating how much we absolutely do not understand about what happened, and I think a lot of the media is finally backing off and letting it just kind of go.
Well, now that there is prospect of all-out war in Ukraine, the attention has been shifted a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, something we've been talking about for weeks, and here we go with the rhetoric being ratcheted up. And all kinds of, we've been listening to radio and watching newscasts before.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's incredible to me how one-sided everything is. How we are referring to these demonstrators in the eastern parts of Ukraine as armed thugs and even terrorists at one point.
Yeah.
No matter what, how you feel about them, you compare it to what was going on in Kiev only a few months earlier, and it's basically a very, very similar thing, if not the exact same thing, of people wanting to overthrow their government.
Yeah, you pointed that out.
Yeah, now the fact that, Russia might be controlling what's going on. They might be behind this. Wow, you think? They used to be part of the same country. Many of them speak the same language. They're very, very close together. I'll tell you something that's more shocking than that was that the United States was controlling what was going on before that, and we're not very close by. And it's, I'm not surprised by that. I don't think anybody is. But for us to be saying that it's unthinkable that Russia should be interested in what's going on in their next door neighbor's backyard, it's just really, really hypocritical.
Strange coming from us. We're clearly not a part of their backyard. And if anything, they have more entitled to be involved and concerned. It speaks to the stratification, dare I say, the spread of the military-industrial complex we have here in the U.S. that basically has bases everywhere, and we've decided that any interest in the world is our interest, and it's really weird to see it because a lot of, I think, people's attitudes are we need to kind of bring this back in a little bit. It's a lot of waste, and it's really presumptuous of
us to be
going to these places like that.
But, Kyle, in all fairness, what would you say if I told you that the head of Russia's intelligence was visiting one of the cities in eastern Ukraine over the last few days? Would that not be kind of like a smoking gun that they're behind this somehow? The head of Russian intelligence in eastern Ukraine, right? I mean, that's enough, isn't it?
I thought it was the head of American intelligence.
Oh, thanks for spoiling my point. Yes, it was. I was trying to run around the logic here and show you that, yes, in fact, that's what happened. Nothing like that happened in eastern Ukraine. What happened in western Ukraine was that the head of the CIA visited Kiev.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, you balance that out. How does that look? How does that look as far as trying to influence the situation? You kind of see where Russia might be coming from. Not excusing behavior and things like that.
It was a complete coincidence, officially, but it's speaks to, the Russians basically have secret agents, apparently. That's as far as they'll go, but they don't want to be associated with it and have said, as you've reminded me in our discussions, that they have no interest, and they've said that clearly.
Well, they said that. They said
part of, yeah.
They have no more interest in any part of eastern Ukraine, but obviously things are going to get a bit tense now with demonstrations, and depending on how Ukraine responds to them, if they treat these people as if they're terrorists and they massacre people, that's going to... That might provoke a reaction that Russia really didn't want to do in the first place. There's this other story today. I just wanted to very quickly focus on this. You might not have heard this in the media. This comes from Euronews. Ukrainian presidential candidate beaten early on Tuesday by a crowd that took exception to comments he made in a television interview. And this is a guy who was pro-Russia. So mob mentality is an ugly thing no matter what side it's on. This guy was a fringe candidate who happened to be pro-Russia but was beaten up by a mob of people in eastern Ukraine. So it's madness. We need to keep an eye on it and not make any kind of assumptions.
Well, say our listeners want to go and check it out. I mean, really the best kind of diplomacy is going and visiting these places. You and I, we want to go to the places that are farthest flung. The more we hear about how horrible somebody might have had a time there, a crazy experience, they got vilely ill, a crazy train system, that intrigues us, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know it intrigues you. I know you well.
Yes.
And I'm kind of hip to that these days. I'm into it. The weirder, the more bizarre, the more I'm a little bit fascinated and want to actually see for myself. And in certain situations, you hear, this is the attitude. You got to go there and see why. You can't just join in some opinion that somebody spouts. It's not the point. You can take it, you can listen to it, you can understand that that's a perspective, but you really have to go and see it yourself. So let's see. What if I want to go to Crimea or
Crimea? Yes.
Why not? Well, what's it like there?
Well, I actually have a tour book, the one we took with us. Hey, check that out. It's got it's got comments by Michael Palin.
Wow.
That's the guy who directed us to a Nepalese restaurant in London. Well, he didn't direct us personally.
Book.
This is a real book. How do you say that name?
Brad.
Brad, with a T. On Ukraine, at least 2 years old, maybe three.
Ukraine.
But this is one quote here. When Ukraine gained independence, Crimea was the main object of dispute with Russia. The area was ethnically Russian, home to the treasured Black Sea Fleet. If war were to break out between Ukraine and Russia, it would be a fight for Crimea. This is nothing new. People have known this for a long, long time. It's not. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything to do with Putin or with the pro-democracy movement or anything like that. It's always been something that's been disputed. And I also want to read this part here. Crimea was simply reduced to a Russian province until 1954. When the Crimean Autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic was transferred to the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic in remembrance of the Pereyaslav Agreement between Russia and Ukraine. So that's the most I've ever heard about why it was transferred from one country to the other, or from one region of a country to another region of the country. So it was mostly a symbolic move, but it turned into something a whole lot more serious. Are we out of time?
I am afraid we are.
Well, you are not out of time, listeners. You can still call and pledge and show your support for this show, this station, this conversation. Hey, that rhymes.
631-632-6901. Good evening for Off the Wall. This is Kyle and Emmanuel.
Have a good night.
Take care.